Hello and welcome to the Tinker Talks podcast. I'm Second Lieutenant Anthony Highland with 72nd Air Base Wing Public Affairs, and today I'm partnering with the 507th Air Refueling Wing, often referred to simply as the 507th here at Tinker Air Force Base. The 507th will be launching a podcast of their own soon, and this just might be their first episode. So whether you're listening to Tinker Talks or the 507th's first episode, we're happy you're here. So appropriately, I'm sitting with the key leaders of the 507th Air Refueling Wing, who've graciously given us some of their time. So without further ado, Colonel Gormley, Chief Wiseman, can you introduce yourselves and share a bit about your backgrounds?
Yeah, Chief, you want me to go first?
Yep, go ahead. All you.
My name is Colonel Matthew Gormley. I have been in the Air Force going on 25 years, roughly, give or take a couple days. I grew up in East Tennessee, Knoxville, Tennessee, and my dad's a nuclear physicist, so we moved a lot, but I was also spent some time in Vienna, Austria, so back and forth there. Decided to go to the Air Force Academy, graduated, got a pilot slot, spent about 10 years active duty, and then decided to get off active duty and join the reserve. And I taught as a civilian, I taught acquisition requirements at the Defense Acquisition University for about 9 years, while I flew at Andrews Air Force Base, and I did a tour at the Pentagon, and then we moved to McConnell Air Force Base, where I was the OG, and then Operations Group Commander, and then we moved here about 2 years ago, where I took this position, and it's been a great, great, great Air Force career so far. Absolutely wonderful. That's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, excellent. Well, so I come from a Marine Corps family. Dad was a Marine in the 70s, early 80s. Brother went into the Marines, and I can just remember him sitting me down when I was just about to graduate high school. And he said, and I told him, I said, hey, I want to join the Marine Corps, follow in the footsteps of my family. And he told me, H no, like heck no, right? And I looked at him, I said, what am I supposed to do? He goes, you're only going into the Air Force. So at the time, I was like, all right, Dad, I trust you. So I jumped in with both feet, haven't looked back since, did 10 years of active duty. All those 10 years I was in the security forces, thoroughly enjoyed it, did a lot of stuff when it came to convoys, helicopter patrols, yes, working the flight line and the gate for 12 to 14 hour days. Had a great time, but felt like there was a moment of transition for me. And that's when I jumped into the Reserve Command and got stationed over at Scott Air Force Base as my first reserve assignment. Still trying to figure out the civilian world because I've been in the military uniform for 10 years, really most of my early adult life. And from that point, just as I'm trying to navigate the civilian side, working in my reserve career, still maintaining my commitment, getting, those points for towards retirement, those benefits, that we get from TRICARE, all crucial for a family. And at that time, we just had a newborn, a daughter. And so a lot of change was happening, but I had the security blanket, really, of being in uniform at the moment. Kind of worked myself through, Inspector General Office, through being a logistics planner, and then got transferred out to, on the military side, out to the Force Generation Center at the Reserve Command. Worked out there, and then my military assignment here just recently in January 2023. On the civilian side, I work in Air Mobility Command. So I still keep my feet in the door when it comes to military strategy, planning, and connection. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's funny that your family had a military kind of background. My family had no idea what I was doing. No idea. So jumping in the military and putting on a uniform, I joined the Air Force, but I could have joined the Navy and I wouldn't have had any difference. I wouldn't have known the difference. So it was brand new to me. So when I see my family to this day, they truly, when they come on an Air Force base, they're just not around me very often. So when they come on the Air Force base, I have to start from ground zero. I have to explain to them exactly what we're doing, who we are. This is the Air Force, but there is a Navy presence over here, so it confuses them. So, but anyway, it's been it's a learning process for my family to this day. My wife, not so much. She's gone through 13 deployments with me, so she's known me from when we were dating all the way through the 13th and up to today. But my kids, this is still a new environment for them. 17, 12, and 3. We had a little COVID surprise.
Okay.
He's 3 now. So
cool.
Yeah, my daughter still tells me I'm not a big deal. Oh. Yeah. And I say, you know what? That's right, honey. I'll go take the trash out.
Well, if she only knew.
That's what I keep telling them.
We'll vouch for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So with all of the experience that you guys have in mind, what brought you to the 507th Air Refueling Wing, and what does it mean to you to be an Okie?
So I'll take that one. So I came here as a traditional reservist. A traditional reservist is what the majority of the reservists are, and that is they're part-time. So my first position here was the deputy commander. So I lived in Wichita, Kansas. I'm an American Airlines pilot and my civilian job. So I would come down and do my deputy job maybe 3-4 times a month, 8 days maybe a month roughly, depending on what the commander needed, sometimes more, sometimes less. I am now a full-time member on orders. So I came as a part-time and I'm now full-time. And that just shows you, depending on the needs of the unit, there's all kinds of different opportunities. So, but as a full-time member of the Okies, this is hands down the best culture of any unit I've ever been in. And I've been in quite a few. After 25 years, we've moved quite a bit. So being an Okie, in fact, as a young air crew member, flying KC-135s back in the early 2000s, I won't forget going through Milton Hall a lot, going to the different places in CENTCOM, and I'd see a crew. And inevitably, if I saw the Okie crew, you could just tell with the patch, you know the patch, you could just tell that there's a family-type atmosphere, environment, as they spoke to one another, as they talked. They were you could just tell the friend, the family aspect was there. And you can see it in some other units, but the Okies just have something special. So it's a privilege to be here. I didn't grow up in Okie, but I'm learning quickly what it means. And I can tell you, we've had multiple inspections over this past couple of years. When folks from our Reserve Command or AMC or Big Air Force come here, one of the things they say at the very end is, you have one of the best cultures we've ever seen. And that was before me, and it's gonna be after me. Has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with this environment and what the folks, the Okies, have created for themselves.
Right on. I mean, just speaking as a subordinate, you know, someone who's experienced a lot of commanders, I'm sure you know, like, your influence has a lot to do with maintaining that. But I would imagine it has something to do with, this is my first time being stationed in Oklahoma, and there's just something about the residents here, I guess, like the native Oklahomans are very hardworking and community driven. And it's been a really big pleasure to be part of. So I'm imagining that has something to do with translating into the unit as well, would you say?
The community is everything. With a strong community, the military unit is basically, it's boundless. You can do anything. We absolutely have that here. And Tinker is a massive base. I've not worked regularly on a base this large. When you say Team Tinker, you're talking tens of thousands of people. I'm not used to that. I'm used to maybe 3,000-4,000 folks in a base, like, you know, a smaller base like McConnell right up the road here. So when you say Team Tinker, you're talking about the Navy, it's the 552, the 72nd, OCALC, list goes on. So I know the Okies are not the largest unit, but we are awfully proud of the Okie patch and the Okie culture. Chief, what do you think? What do you think about that?
You know, I didn't know what I was going to get myself into when I got assigned here. I thought, you know, I'm going to be a command chief. This is my first time being a command chief. And I thought, I'll come in, maybe set some, you know, leadership goals for the enlisted. But when I got here, I realized that there's a massive culture of excellence, a culture of standards. I just kind of needed to sit back and watch for 6 months, you know, and kind of understand what was happening. And the more and more I got to know people, the more and more I started to form the DNA of being an Okie. Now, I'm an implant Okie. I was not born and raised in Oklahoma. I've never been in this unit from 17 to 59. But I will tell you, I feel every bit of it about this culture. And like any family and any culture, there's ups and downs. You know, there's left and right turns, but we do it together. And I think when I started to kind of see that rise to the top, it really told me that we could get through anything, regardless of what is happening. We'll work it out.
Alongside the community and the other partners here on base.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's key.
So we clearly have awesome people working on the mission here. So would you be able to elaborate on the mission of the 507th Air Refueling Wing, fueling the fight with combat-ready air power?
Right. So fueling the fight, we are a KC-135 unit. So we're a tanker, stratotanker unit. So the K means tanker and the C means cargo, just for all those, when you think the F means fighter and A-10s, attack. So KC-135s, it's one of the older planes in our inventory. The newest KC-135 is a 1964 model. The oldest is a 1958. What makes Tinker so amazing is the KC-135 comes here to be to go through the depot. And it's a capability that our nation has, unlike any other, where they can take an aircraft at this age, it runs through, and this is periodic. This doesn't happen every year because it's expensive, but these jets come back ever so often. They go through the depot and they come out the other end, and we pick them up, we go fly them, and then we take them back to our units. And the jet basically has been upgraded. Depends on the aircraft, but upgraded, whether it's the cockpit, the engines. I mean, I could go down a litany of different upgrades. It's a wonderful thing to have here at Tinker and a capability of the United States. But again, we're tankers. So we have a mission, and that is to fuel the fight. That means that we go overhead, for instance, the CENTCOM, or if it's in the Pacific, we go overhead and we will orbit and we'll be tagged. We'll have a receiver, and the receiver comes up, gets gas, and goes and does its business, and sometimes comes back, because our job is to be there on time with the fuel they need. That's our job. So we take off knowing where we're going to refuel and who we're going to refuel. Sometimes that changes en route. Things change. Agility, it's important. Flexibility is the key to air power, that old saying. Well, this tank unit, we have about 8 KC-135s. We have an alert mission here. So we have a crew that's 24/7 here, ready to go at a moment's notice if the nation calls. So that's always a part of our mix. The one thing that I mentioned before in the intro is we're reservists. So unlike yourself, an active duty member where you're here every day, 75% of the reservists in this wing, the 507th, live in 28 different states. That means that these individuals are flying over or driving through many cities with reserve, guard, active duty bases that they choose. You know what? I'm not going to stop here. I'm going to keep trucking hours down the road or flights, and I'm going to I'm going to Oklahoma City to be an Okie. That's a big deal. There's something to be said there. There's a culture there. Again, we're talking 28 states. We've got just under 1,500 members, so 75% of those are part-time. Now, some people come in a little more each month. Some people come in a little less, depending on their AFSC and whether they're going to deploy and what kind of training needs they have. But for the most part, we talked about this earlier today, a TR, a traditional reservist, versus an active duty member, versus is the wrong word, but if you put them side by side, they both go downrange and they do the job. They get the job done. Same training requirements. Everything's standard. There's no difference other than the reservist is only here a few days a month. So when they're here on that weekend, we are here for 1 weekend a month. That's part of the contract. So it's basically 16 hours a month to get the training and the necessary education, whatever it might be for for the deployment or for the mission. They have 16 hours, 8 days on 8 hours on Saturday, 8 hours on Sunday, and then they go back home, back to their families, back to life. But we expect them to show up ready to go, because we don't have the time or the resources to bring them in, because it's money. It costs a lot of money. But I can tell you, if our members need the extra time or at the helm, whether it's driving a forklift or flying a jet or our civil engineers, if they need that extra time, we'll figure out how to get them here, especially if they say, you know what, I need some additional training. Done. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, General Healy, our Air Force Reserve commander, has charged us to be ready now. Right. And I know that's a statement for probably everyone who wears the uniform, but more specifically, the intent and the focus and where we're driving all of our resources is ready now. And I wanted to kind of read something, and I know this wasn't planned, at least here, but, you know, I've been doing research on our great power competition, and the China Aerospace Studies Institute has produced a book talking about aerospace power. And specifically, I just want to read something, a one sentence in here, but it talks about the People's Liberation Army Air Forces, how they will perform counter-intervention function targeted at preventing the U.S. Air Force from conducting operations in the region by striking the U.S. Air Force tanker fleet and AWACS. So I use that as a motivation and a leadership point when I talk to the airmen of the 507th, that we have to be ready now, right? This, we're not joking around here, right? We need to take advantage of every moment and every opportunity because our adversaries or potential adversaries out there in the world are watching us. Specifically, we have AWACS and Tanker here, right? So we have a very, very important mission, and there's no time to waste.
Yeah, that sentence basically speaking right to Tinker. I mean, Tanker's an AWACS. I mean, it's basically saying, Tinker, this is what we think, and we're going to stop you. So, yeah.
Considering the standards of excellence and the expectations that these members are held to with not as much time, how does the 507th Air Refueling Wing contribute to the overall mission of Tinker Air Force Base that you were just talking about and the Air Force Reserve Command as well?
Well, I think we bring a perspective that, a reserve perspective that isn't always, I mean, this conversation, I think, definitely matters because there is a large majority of our force that are reservists. Without the reserve component, our capability as a Department of Defense is not nearly as significant or lethal, bottom line. So I think having a reserve wing here really provides our airmen, someone like yourself. You know, we had a discussion earlier this week. Where first-term officers came in, and I think there were about 20 of you sat in the room, and we talked about the 507th and what the reserve force brings. And I could tell, as I watched the crowd, light bulbs came on. Oh, so that's what the Guard and Reserve does. That's what the requirements are. And they just weren't aware. So I think there is an awareness that we bring and a capability that isn't always at the forefront. When it comes to understanding the needs of the Guard and Reserve and from the 507th perspective, the Reserve in particular, because we also have that alert mission that I was talking about earlier, and we have a nuclear mission, which are incredibly important to our strategic command and to the bigger Air Force mission sets. That nuclear mission is a no-fail mission, and it's a deterrence. We do that here. The 507th is a part of that. So whether we're a reserve force or we're active duty, that's an incredibly important capability that we bring that I regularly get to talk to the 552 or the 72nd about. We had General Moore come over, the OCALC commander, and Colonel Anderson a few weeks ago to discuss the KC-135 and our mission set. And so I think there's a great opportunity for us, the Reserve Command, to really speak to the various active duty components here on base to bring an understanding. So I think that in that respect, I think we bring a lot to the Tinker overall mission set.
Chief, and I think we're stronger together. When Chief Gridell just arrived, he's the command chief at the 72nd. I had an office call with him. I went over there and we just talked about life, backgrounds, and what we can do for each other. Because there are certain things that we can do to help out over there. You know what I mean? As far as the mission sets for Tinker proper. And then also they are hugely helping us, especially when it comes to NCO induction, senior NCO induction as an example, because we just don't have the resources and we just talked about time. We don't even have the time really to really put those things together. So without their support, we can't directly enhance our enlisted force over here. And that goes with the Tinker's Chiefs group as well. You know, Every moment that I've been here, there's been a connection or an event that we tie into. And I will say this on this podcast, we are Tinker Strong. And I really do feel that, not just some words that get thrown over on Facebook. It really is important. And it's a matter of mission effectiveness. And we can't get it done without them.
I was sitting in that first term officer course you were discussing, and I thought it was really cool to see and to learn, you know, you're not just sitting on reserve. Reservists aren't just sitting on reserve like the name might indicate. It's an asset of ongoing missions. And it was very, very cool to learn how important it is to everyday operations. And you spoke, of course, specifically on the 507th, but you spoke on reserve as a whole. And that was a really cool lesson. And I never, you know, thought about what I would do when my time comes to separate from active duty, but it definitely inspired me to consider the reserve more than I ever had when that time does come. So I just wanted to share that. It was a really good message to share, and I do think that having the conversations like these for the whole DOD population
Absolutely. Is
a really good idea.
And I am a proponent. It doesn't matter to me when I whether you're a reservist, you're active duty, a guardsman, we are all on the same team.
Yeah, that's right.
So whether an active duty member says, you know what, for family reasons, I want to stay in Oklahoma City, but I still want to be a part of the military. I still want to put this uniform on. I still want to give back. Let's look at the 507th, or let's go over to the Guard. There are opportunities out there, and it's incumbent on the leadership, on us, to go out and just discuss them. Just awareness. Information's a gift. I always say that. Information's a gift. I want to give you as much as I can about what I'm doing, about what the 507th is doing. And if it resonates, great. If not, there are other opportunities that we can help you with.
The 507th's vision is SH Citizen Airmen, shaping tomorrow's leaders today. Can you explain what this means to you and how it guides your leadership?
So first off, SH. Let me just point out real quick. So SH Citizen Airmen. SH is, when you look at our Okie patch, I'm kind of showing it to you right now, but the Okie patch has a KC-135 and it has Okies at the bottom, and then red, you see SH. So if I'm talking to an elementary school, I'll say SH, oh, of course, that means sooner home. But if I'm talking to a military member, that means shit hot. That's what that means.
Heck yeah.
And I think that resonates with a lot of people. So the 507th is incredibly proud of this patch, and we're incredibly proud of those red letters, shit hot. So just for the record, I want to make sure that everyone pronounced that correctly, okay? Now, what are we doing for our airmen? We're doing a lot of different things. Every commander that comes in has got some new ideas. One of the things that I think the chief and I have been working on pretty intently, and chief, I want you in particular to speak more to this, but we have something called the Okie University. And the university itself was a thought that chief had, and I taught at the Defense Acquisition University, so I was able to bring in some terminology, and I think the lunch and learn, I remember having this initial discussion with you, but we had lunch and learns at DAU. Mm-hmm. Chief took it and ran, and has created a really neat, and again, I want them to know everything you've done, sure. Created this organized methodology to bring professional development to our airmen. So what I opted to do, I said, how about every quarter we bring in, I'll call him a heavy hitter, for lack of a better term. So the first quarter we had General Looney, William Looney, goes by Toons. He was the AETC commander, Air Education Training Command commander, a few years ago, retired. But he came in and spoke from the E1 to the O6 and everyone in between. Leadership is leadership is leadership. And he spoke to us on leadership and everything that he's learned in his career. And then you know what, Chief, I'm going to hand it over to you because we had some other guest speakers also, but I'll let you.
Yeah, so we'll just talk about the other guest speaker we just recently had this summer, and he was a retired captain, Navy SEAL, Bill Wilson, and he was absolutely phenomenal. And we specifically targeted the NCO Corps and the CGO Corps in two separate sessions, right? It wasn't a full blown out, massive wing event where we had 900 plus airmen showing up at a theater, but it was a very intimate setting, intentionally. And so that being said is that's what Okie University is really about. We're applying intentional professional development education to enhance our airmen at different stages and different levels. And I know the Air Force is rolling out, you know, formalized foundations courses to develop different spots of airmen as they grow through that enlisted continuum. But we're just targeting for refinement and sharpening and proficiency because we think that that's going to take our game to the next level. How does shaping tomorrow's leaders today mean for me? Is there's no time to waste. We talked about a UTA weekend. We're talking about literally 16 hours a month. That's all we have for these airmen. I always said, when I first got here, I said this in little small groups, that we have 16 hours before the balloon goes up to be ready, right? And that's not just AFSC proficiency, which is. And it's not just fitness. It's not just medical readiness, right? But it is professional development. You know, it's sharpening that sword on some of those skill sets that we're going to need when it's mission command out in an island in the middle of the Pacific and a tech sergeant is running the shop with a captain, right? We need those two people to be as sharp as possible, to know the same leadership stories, the same leadership vignettes that we've gotten, you know what I mean, in our growth at our level. We want them to have that so they can start processing that information and how it applies to them, how to treat other people right, how to lead during in conflict. those types of situations. So bringing in the guest speakers, the Oki University, the Lunch and Learn, to be fair, and I'll just kind of say this about the Lunch and Learn. I sat at my desk, and yes, I put my feet up on the desk. I was drinking some coffee because I was trying to brainstorm, what does Lunch and Learn look like for on a weekend, and I only have them once a month. And I looked over to my desk and I saw all these leadership books that I had bought over the massive amount of years and some of the papers that I kept from conferences that I was at, writing other people's notes. And I looked at it and I said, well, the story's right here. If I've read and these books have impacted me, I'm going to reach into these books, into these authors, and that's the story and the topic I'm going to take to the table at lunch. And we're going to just openly discuss it. And I had to cancel some. So if you're an Oki listening to this podcast and you're like, hey, Chief, you didn't do September, that's fair. But we tried to be as consistent as we could. You know what I mean? Because, again, we are pouring everything we can into our team here.
And we don't waste any time during those UTAs. So we're even going to use the lunches as an opportunity to get something done. Yeah. So we said, bring your lunch. And we're going to, you know, there was a curriculum that he kind of developed. And there's other folks, guest speakers that will come and speak at the lunches. But again, you only have 16 hours. And so we utilize every minute we can.
Yeah. And now in the future, I'm really excited about this. We haven't done this yet since I've been here, but we are doing a thing called CGOLD, C-G-O-L-D, CGO Leadership Development. And that's going to be a Lunch and Learn hosted by a Lieutenant Colonel here on a UTA to, again, be intentional and target that core group, because those are our next leaders, but we need them today.
Great. And I think it's cool how you've mentioned a couple of times that it's a more intimate group instead of that big old auditorium, because right. It does allow for those interactions that kind of that provide a lot more value. You know, they're all valuable, of course, but that intimate connection.
Speaking to a specific group.
Yeah, it does feel. I could see how that would be a lot more valuable for the people that are getting everything.
Yeah. And I'll make one more point before we move on. But Chief Mass Sergeant Browning from the 552 Air Control Wing, she was a former command chief. Over there when I first arrived, this is just part of our connections and our Tinker Strong mentality here. I went over to see her just to introduce myself, and she said something to me, to be honest with you, I think changed the trajectory of my leadership style, and it was exposure equals elevation. And I had to sit back for a minute when she told that to me, and I said, well, you know, trying to process, what does that really mean to me? And I will tell you, I 1000% believe that with professional development. We expose them and we're going to elevate them. You know, we expose them to better training, we're going to elevate them. There's a quote that I want to, that's out there about training. You never rise to the occasion, you always rise to the highest level of your training. And that is the same to be true about professional development, right? We don't want to unequip them when we send them out. We want to equip them as much as we can. And obviously, I'm very passionate about it because I feel like this is really the foundation of producing one of the best airmen.
That gave me a really good insight into the leadership that you guys have been providing. So moving from leadership into priorities, one of the top priorities that you've expressed is airmen and their families. What initiatives are in place to support this priority?
Well, the airmen and their families are the most important thing in our Air Force. Hands down, it should be all about the airmen. One of the areas that let's talk about something just recently. So, Suicide Prevention Month, September. We just last week we brought. In fact, this was a 507th led event, but it was a Tinker All invite, and we had an individual come, a guest speaker come, and it was. Talking across the generations, meaning I have a 17-year-old, I have a 12-year-old and a 3-year-old, so there's quite a few ages there. But as I'm talking to a young lieutenant like yourself versus talking to an old crusty chief like Chief Wiseman over here.
Here we go.
There's definitely a difference in maybe some of the verbiage, the language, maybe some of the examples I use. I forgot what the joke was. You said it a little while ago, and he didn't have any idea what you were talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Talking across generations. He's talking about old black and white movies, and yeah, you don't even know what black and white looks like. So it was a really neat opportunity for all of Tinker to show up and speak and discuss what we see right now across the generations. And we did that for all the families. It wasn't just for the members. Another really neat event that I take real pride in is what we call 507th Family Day that happens every year. Right now, it's in, I believe, March. Is that when we...
May.
Is it May? I'm sorry. May. No, you're that's right. You're right. May. So, because it's hot. It was very hot. That's right. Absolutely. It was not March. It was May, where we had just under 10,000 people show up. So we had members and their families. And I've been here now, I think that's the third one. It has grown each year massively. And this past year, I think we had 12 food trucks. But more importantly, we had 25 helping agencies there. So we had a lot of retirees, Oki retirees, and we had a big conglomeration of all the previous members. But then right alongside them, we had all of the helping agencies, whether it was from the 72nd or the 552, but we offered the families different capabilities that we sometimes, as a 507th, can't offer. Being a reserve unit, we're just not resourced as such. So whether it was Colonel Resetter or Colonel Voigt, going to them and saying, hey, would you take part in this? Help us bring this capability to our airmen and their families. And that has been that family day has been such an amazing event. Because again, it goes back to that culture. When you get families, because I've been in units where they don't always want to come out and hang out on the weekend. They don't. The 507th takes so much pride in itself and the culture, they can't wait to come and hang out and introduce their friends and family to the folks they work alongside, whether they're reservists, traditional reservists or full-time. So, and every year it's okay, what are we gonna do next year to top it? Because people want it to be a extraordinary event. But anyway, for friends and for the family and the airmen, it really is just, it's trying to make the most of the time we have with them, which isn't a lot. And when we do have that, we work with our partners to bring them those types of events.
It's pretty cool that they want to introduce their family to their second family, their work family.
Right.
So knowing that they want to spend a weekend doing that is really cool. And it shows how connected the unit is. I'd imagine that these initiatives take a lot of effort and consideration to start and maintain. It's a lot of moving pieces, but it sounds like you and your team have dedicated serious effort and care into the programs. So knowing that we as airmen are expected to emphasize excellence in all we do, readiness and resiliency are crucial for any military unit. What steps are you taking to maintain and improve these aspects within the 507th?
Yeah, great question. And it's not an easy question because maintenance is hard. Right, especially when you only have 2 days a month, but consistent communication. Now, I will tell you, especially if you're from the 507th listening to this, communication is never easy, right? It's never perfect, but the intent is that we're trying to make sure that we get the information out as quickly as possible, as efficiently as possible, and hopefully as clear as possible. But there's enough connection within the Oki family for sure that we can come back and ask the questions for reclarification, right? But I will give you an example of what we're really trying to do for readiness and resiliency. Just recently, we went through a host of exercises and inspections and things, but I'll just specifically talk about the readiness exercise. For us on a weekend, this is a massive lift. So we're talking about CBRN. We're talking about AFSC type scenarios. We did a split operations flying our mission generation force element here on the Tinker side. And then a lot of our mission support teams exercise out at
Glenwood,
correct?
Yeah. In fact, Glenwood's a 72nd asset that they not only let us utilize for the entirety of our readiness exercise, but many of the 72nd's personnel helped us out too. Just wanted to add that
because
we wouldn't have done as well as we did without them.
Yeah, but it all happened in the planning piece, right? Before we actually executed, where the IG team, the experts, the SMEs that we have, the subject matter experts that we have within the units, developing scenarios that stress us out. Right? And that stress is going to help us in our resiliency. I know sometimes we talk about resiliency more on the helping agencies and different things. And I think that's very, very important, but that's just one piece of it, of the word resiliency for us. But when you tie readiness and resiliency together, we've really got to push these airmen and stress them a little bit in training. Remember, I told you that statement about we only rise to the highest level of our training. So we need to kind of see where we're at, because there's two words here that I want to kind of share. Sometimes you have to shove on airmen and then you can love on airmen, right? So we gotta kind of have to push them a little bit so that out of their comfort zones so we could see where that's at. And then we'll bring them in under our arms and say, all right, good job. We've learned some stuff. let's get back out there and do it again. And I think the readiness exercise really helped kind of show some areas where we can improve and some areas where we're really, really strong in. Part of that was really just putting the stress into the scenarios. I learned that early on in my career. I was a staff sergeant as a combat convoy instructor down at Camp Bullis in San Antonio. Just got sent down there. It was right in the height of the Iraq War. We're sending convoy teams, you know, seemed like monthly over there, and a lot of things were happening. And a particular airman was trying to apply an IV in the field to a master sergeant because it was simulated that this master sergeant got attacked by an IED and they're highly injured and they're applying combat medical support to them. And so as she's doing it, the instructor said, "Hey, let's get around and just amp the situation up." And we had risen the level of intensity by just kind of causing chaos around her, loud voices, different things of that nature. And she started pushed her limit. Let me just put it that way. And she couldn't apply the IV because it was just too much. But I learned so much at that moment that, you know, you can shove them a little bit, but you've got to be able to apply love to them for sure. But I think that is really the hand in hand when it comes to readiness and resiliency.
Yeah. And I'm sure she learned a lot about her limits too. So there's, yeah. I think it's a double-sided yeah. coin.
And we sent her off and as far as I understand, they were successful. Awesome. Right. So yeah, perfect.
Another priority is creating the workplace environment we need. What does an ideal workplace environment look like for citizen airmen and the local community members that have, at this point, become pillars of the wing's day-to-day operations?
I'm going to go with the word culture here, right? I think it's a consistent building of our environment. I think we mentioned earlier in this podcast about, this stuff is not easy, right? Communication's not easy. Building a positive working environment is not easy because we got airmen coming in from 28 states flying in. They have different backgrounds. They have different upbringings. They have different cultures that they're currently working in, right? Unlike active duty where you come in and now you're here and then you just kind of absorb and assimilate, we're almost assimilating, it feels like sometimes, every month, right? And that's okay, but that just comes with challenges. But so we have to be intentional about how we build our environment, how we build our culture. I mean, we have things in place like the DEOCs, small team engagements. And for me personally, I'll just speak of the chiefs that we have in the 507th. Very, very, very strong. I mean, we come in as a team. We know the commander's intent. We know what kind of culture that we desire and that we want. We try to communicate that the best that we can. And we try to shape it within the subcultures of our wing. And I think that it's consistent culture building is what really helps us at the 507th.
I agree with all that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not going to even add anything to it.
No, I appreciate
good.
It.
I agree with all that.
No, thank you so much. Yeah.
It sounds like a incredibly challenging but rewarding responsibility to lead such dedicated and passionate people, but it also sounds like it's going successfully. So that's always great to hear. But knowing that that's one of the challenges you face, what are some of the other big challenges that you guys are dealing with?
One of the things that I, as a commander, am always very concerned with is the threat environment. And I say that as an operator, I think, and maintainer and maintenance, I think we're given a little more understanding on a regular basis, whether they're intel briefs or just the regular flying, the sorties that we fly. I think the threat is just kind of, it's a part of our sortie, or it's introduced, almost like stress inoculation. We talk about it and we have scenarios. One of the things that I feel is very important is making sure that the MSG, the Mission Support Group, the medical folks, that they also are introduced to the why. And I think introducing that threat is extremely important. So one of we did this not long ago, a couple of UTAs ago, a few months ago, where we brought everyone in and we talked about the Great Power Competition. What does that mean? Why are we transitioning from CENTCOM to the Pacific? We have a lot of young folks. There's a lot. In fact, I don't have the percentage. It's probably a good one to get. What's the percentage of 22 and under in our wing? It's significant. And I'm speaking really to them, to that younger group, but also to the different AFSCs that aren't given those threat briefs as much as we are. And we brought them into the auditorium to explain the why. And I thought it was important, but it didn't take long after we had the threat brief to where I had members come up and thank me for doing, or wasn't me, the leadership team decided to do that because we all saw a gap there in knowledge. I want the dentists, the docs, the CE members, LRS, the security forces, I want everyone to understand why we are coming in every month and why we're asking so much of each member. There's a lot of, and this is an intentional stress, this is just, as a military member, you're responsible for X, Y, and Z. And I need them to understand the why. Because deploying is why we're here. We are here to deploy if and when the nation calls. So having a threat brief, in fact, there was a time for those in that were there, they remember, you could have heard a pin drop. That threat brief did what I wanted, and that was I brought the threat to the members. I brought the threat to the 507th, and I wanted them to see exactly what our adversaries are looking to do to our, whether it's our way of life, it's our military, you fill in the blank. And I think it was successful. And I think doing that ever so often is important. So that's one of the challenges that I am constantly evaluating. And I don't think you can do that too much. There's always obviously a need to know, so you don't take it up to a too high of a level in terms of the secret versus top secret, whatnot. But we do it at a level which is you can do this without even introducing any of that, and you can still make your point. So, and I think the rest of the wing really appreciated that, from my opinion. I don't know what Chief, how you.
Yeah, for me, it's focusing on standards. You know, you talked about generations and how we communicate. That scenario that we had recently at the base theater, and as I was sitting through that session, I was realizing that the way I see standards for my generation may be a little bit different than what the millennials see, or even Gen Z sees, And so it's really an interesting discussion if you want to kind of sit down. You know, we could always sit down and like hash it out through coffee and different things. But it's hard to kind of enforce the standard where individualism right now is on the high, just generationally speaking. And a lot of changes, you know, and a lot of maybe some stuff in the AFI that may be miscommunicated that, you know, are interpreted differently depending on who's reading and what lens they have. And so what we're still trying to do is hold the line, right? In a time of our Air Force that is changing and so trying to navigate that as a, like the Colonel said, an older chief. By the way, I'm only 42 years old, just for anyone who's listening. But for an older chief that's kind of been around.
He looks a little older.
And to be fair, coming from security forces, which in that culture is a little bit different than maybe some other AFSCs. And so we're trying to motivate airmen. We're trying to inspire airmen, right? Build morale, motivation, all under this umbrella of holding the line. And so I still think that's a challenge. We are up for the challenge because I will tell you the 507th individuals are winners, and so we're going to do whatever it takes to win this. But that's just constant. That's always happening.
Sometimes it takes that seriousness, right? Because we adapt. This is our day-to-day life. If you're a reservist, you come every so often, and it's part of who you are, and right. It takes that re-assimilation, like you said. But it does kind of become part of our core. So I think reiterating the seriousness of why we're somewhere, it does re-motivate and re-inspire on why we put on the uniform. It sounds like that's the motivating force for you guys. Is there any other ways that you would identify as motivating forces for you, or ways that you inspire your people?
You know, for me, I'll just jump in real quick. Sorry, Colonel. For me, it's personal story, right? It's the things that I had experienced in my career, you know, that I can relate to a certain topic. And I think there's a connection there among airmen that you can't get by just giving the talking points from public affairs. No offense, public affairs, but you know what I mean. It's not saying the stuff that I'm supposed to quote say, but it's saying the stuff with meaning and a story behind it. Because when we talk about Tinker Strong, it really does matter, right? We got a lot of people that are behind their computer screens after work, and they're not connected to airmen. right? And we're trying to draw them out of their dorms. We're trying to draw them out of their house because they're single airmen, right? Because they just want to connect. And I know they do, right? And so communicating Tinker Strong to me is, hey, I need them just as much as they need me. You know, stories like that, or stories when we talk about standards and discipline, and someone will say, why do I have to cut my hair a certain length? You know what I mean? That doesn't make any sense anymore, right? But when we really pull the thread and look behind the requirement, we see that there's a trust value there, right? And it's something that we have to have as airmen. And I've experienced it firsthand doing nuclear combat convoy exercise or nuclear convoy exercises, where I expected a senior airman with a Mark 19 gun and a heavy weapon to be on a certain place in a mountain, and they're 5 miles away. I have no idea if they're there or not, but I have to trust them. And I can do that by understanding this relationship that you can cut your hair, you can wear your uniform correctly, you can maintain your fitness and your medical standards, right? It all kind of boils down to like really centralized in trust.
One of the areas that I have always felt when I'm hearing a leader speak, whether it's civilian or military, when they're vulnerable, I feel like that really provides the audience with the connectivity that I love. It's nice when you feel that connectivity with that leader. So one of the things I talk about a lot, the suicide awareness also, and especially with where we are this month, that vulnerability, whether you're an E1 to an 06, 07, we all go home to life. We all do. It's agnostic. It doesn't matter your rank, your grade. We all go home to, we all have a mortgage or finances. We have children. We have bills. We have cars. Just the pressures of just life. And one of the things I talk about is, you know, and when we're in the 507th Commander's Call, I'll talk about my personal. We all have our families and the needs of our families, and we're working through those. But one of the things I want our members to know is they can always come back, that connectivity with the Oki family, and they can come back. This is where I want them to point when they have a problem. I want them to look at the 507th as, okay, I'm going to contact somebody when I need some help. So I try and talk about this as much as possible. We did have a suicide earlier this year, and it hurt. And we're working hard as leadership team. What can we do to help the members of the 507th? Because there are folks out there that are hurting right now. Luckily for our unit and the reserve command, every wing has a director of psychological health. So we have a DPH here on staff every day. And that is a blessing because our members can reach out to her. Our first shirt, Senior Scholes, he's a resiliency coordinator. So he's the CAB, the CAN. He's putting all that together for our people. So we do have those resources. But ultimately, what I want, and I think what our leadership team wants, is our members to look at, although they're only here for maybe 2 to 6 days a month, this is the answer that they come back to. And they say, okay, I'm going to contact one of my buddies back in the 507th, I'm having this, whatever the issue is. That's something I'm pushing, and I do think that's something that makes us a little different because I think the culture has created that here. So,
yes, sir, definitely. I think it takes, no matter what, the rank on your shoulder or your chest is going to give you a certain level of credibility. But I feel like that credibility can sometimes be a sheet of paper until
exactly
you
right.
open it up and it becomes three-dimensional.
Completely
so
agree.
Exactly what you're saying. Like, I know that the leaders I've respected the most have been the ones that have humanized themselves because we respect the rank, right? But you admire the person.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, great way of putting it.
I appreciate you guys sharing that such a serious story and with such a strong message. And now that we've learned a little bit about motivation and inspiration, what are some of your short-term and long-term goals for the 507th?
Well, short-term, I was actually going to point back to that why that we talked about a little while ago. Short-term, because the why is updated ever so often, I do think that we have done a great job, I think, across the Department of Defense with the global power competition, or the great power competition that is a global situation now because of where we're pivoting as a DOD. But that why, and I'm not, there's no specific country I want to point out right now, but it is something that our military and this wing has to be ready because as a tanker, we're needed everywhere as a KC-135, and we had the legs to get anywhere, which is neat. unlike my friends in the C-130 world, a little slower. You know, it takes them a little longer to get there. Tankers, the KC-135 can get places quickly with that fuel, and that's important. So that why, back to the why, sorry to talk about it so much, but I just feel like it's so important that the members understand what we're doing and why we're doing it, because I really think it gives the emphasis on why they're training and what they're doing. From a long-term perspective, every commander is going to say this, but it's resourcing. It's always resourcing. Our Department of Defense, over these last few years, there's definitely ebbs and flows. You know, sometimes it's a feast or famine type deal, and we have the money. Well, now we don't. And so prioritizing and triaging every day as a military member, especially as a leader, that long-term setting this wing up for success long-term, whether you're palming. In fact, we had discussions right before we walked in here today about position papers and getting those to the next palming event to make sure that we're setting this wing up for success, because our leadership are, rightly so, they're putting more on each wing as we go through this new A staff structure. There's more coming. Well, I want to make sure we're resourcing the wing correctly. And that takes years. That's not something that happens next month. That is something that it takes a leadership team to strategically write and get to the Pentagon, basically, soonest. So that's one of my long-term concerns. Okay. About to ask the chief what he thought, but I guess he liked my answer. Thanks, chief.
You know,
thanks.
On the podcast, I will say that was pretty amazing. So you left me speechless.
Okay. No sidebars, hopefully.
No sidebars.
Well played, LT.
As I said in the beginning of this episode, the 507th is going to have a podcast of their own soon. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'm going to just jump in, and I will tell you kind of how this has kind of birthed, if you will. We have a lot of commuters, right? And we have local commuters that drive in from Edmond, which, from my understanding, those that have traveled in from Edmond to Tinker, you're driving early in the morning, 30-plus minutes with the sun directly in your eyes, right? Blinding you. But there's time there. We have commuters that, like myself, I hail from St. Louis, Missouri area, and I fly in every month. So I have an hour and 3 minutes or hour and 30 minutes, depending on the flight, you know, to travel in while I'm on the aircraft. I have another 30 minutes drive to the airport and so forth. So you can see there's time, there's space there. And we talked about we have to maximize every moment. We really do. And I think that, at least from a reserve perspective here, the Oki podcast that we're wanting to create will provide an opportunity to connect. Now, do we hope that the Okies and the 507th listen? Absolutely, right? Because we want to connect. But I'm even looking even further beyond that, because maybe other people want to kind of tune in, because I can't guarantee you it's all going to be formal. Maybe one podcast, we're just talking about our favorite sports teams, you know, and how much I love Notre Dame and how much I dislike Dallas Cowboys. I don't really know, you know what I mean, in that regard. But what I can guarantee you is that connection is a major part of our competitive advantage. And what we're trying to do, at least in the design of the podcast, is, number one, elevate the brand of the Okies and the Reserve Command. Kind of what we do. We talked a little bit about what we do here. We're going to bring in guest speakers, right, and interview them, kind of similar to how you kind of are talking with us, because I want to know what they know. I want to know their story. I want to know, you know, what happened when you were TDY, because I think a lot of the listeners can kind of relate. Yeah, I remember that time too when I was TDY. And again, building connective tissue among our airmen. And I think that this Oki podcast can hopefully deliver that. And also, the second thing is to bolster the connection with our families. We have tried very, very hard in our key support program, I think is what they call it now. It used to be formerly the key spouse program, but the support program with a lot of our families.
KSL.
Yeah, yeah. My wife, Julie, who sits in St. Louis, has only been to this base once. Mm-hmm. Right? So how do we connect reserve families with the reserve community? And so we think maybe one way we can offer this up is through this podcast, a little bit of connective tissue there. And so we'll hear stories from our airmen, hopefully engagements from some of our civic organizations, our civic leaders outside of the gate that always support us. But we want to make it fun, live. Colonel Gormley is hysterical. I don't know if you caught that through this podcast, but he's really, really funny. So I want to tap into that, and we'll just see where it goes. But hopefully, at the end of the day, we want to connect with airmen.
And Tinker is such, again, at the beginning, it's such a massive installation. The Oki unit is only 1,500 to 1,300 strong on any given day. So we're smaller. We're definitely a smaller unit on this base. So it is nice. This podcast is our way of differentiating ourselves a little. It's easy for the 507 to get lost on such an important, massive installation with the depot and the AFSC or Air Force Sustainment Center and 72nd, the 552. So our eight KC-135s can kind of get lost in the mix. So this is just a great opportunity for us to his point, to bring that. It's the word connectivity we use all the time, because that is what it's all about. And I do feel that something as a reservist, and I've been a reservist now since 08, it can get lost. You get so entrenched in the day-to-day ops, that connectivity wanes and you forget about it. So it's something we are striving to get better at. And I think this is just a great opportunity for us just to be better. We don't have a name yet. We're working on that. Yeah, so we're going
to... You need to tell the story of our name dilemma. I think the listeners at least deserve the fact of our turmoil here. So last night we went out to dinner. We were there discussing the podcast, like kind of the vision, the name. And we went through about 1,000 names. I feel like we used ChatGPT. There you go, millennials. We were using technology. But your wife brought up a good point, and I kind of want to connect.
Yeah, inevitably it always boils down to, I think I have a good idea, and then I share it with my wife, and she just is like, no, this is really what you need to do.
Yeah, she's really smart.
So she said, you know, why don't you speak to your members and let them involve themselves with this? Because it also gets the fact you're starting a podcast, and you want their thoughts, but and then it brings them in, and they have a say in the direction you're going, because the name kind of, hopefully, it's a clever enough play on words. It's a neat a naming convention, and so she's right. So I think that's what we're gonna do for the next 30 days or so. If my PA is listening, yeah, we're gonna see if we can offer it up to on Insta. Another generational.
My generation calls it the gram, but whatever you want, whatever you want.
We're gonna go on Insta. My daughter will be really proud of me for saying this. We'll use Insta.
Okay,
and Insta. We'll talk to our folks. We don't use Facebook anymore. That's very old school.
Yeah, I'm not sure we use Facebook anymore.
That's actually all I use. But but we're gonna go out and we'll see if we can find a good name.
Yeah,
talking to our folks, because I'm sure there's some awesome ideas out there.
Yeah, exactly. Again, connection.
Yeah,
it sounds like a unique concept that. It's going to get the conversation started on catching up before y'all get back together. So, hey, I heard you did this or that.
That's right. That's a great point.
I think it'll be a fun one.
Yep.
They'll have the podcast soon, but if any Tinker Airmen, their families, or anyone in the local community wanted to learn more about the 507th, how would they go about doing that?
So there are a couple of ways you could do this. We have social media channels in Facebook, so you can just type in 507th Air Refueling Wing. And I'm sure the search capability will pop it up. You can actually go on any kind of search engine that you prefer and type in the 507th ARW, and then that should pop up a website. If I have to tell you the exact website, you probably won't remember on this podcast. So just what I use Google. So just Google it. So there's always a way you can kind of connect there, and those are and Instagram as well. So those would be some of the spots that you'll see the launch of this podcast, and how to connect. And we'll be on, all the major platforms, that Tinker Talk is on as well. But I'll say something. I'm very thankful to be assigned here at Tinker Air Force Base. I didn't know what I was getting into, and now I don't want to leave, and it will be sad. I mean, you know, things do come to an end, especially in the military, people PCS or retire and things. But this has been one of the greatest assignments. And so I'm willing to do whatever it takes to pour every fiber of my being into helping the airmen here at the 507th and here at Tinker.
And just for finish this up in terms of what so we're doing the podcast for our members and that connectivity, but also want the listeners to understand that there are so many opportunities here in the reserve, but specifically here in the 507th, we need boom operators, we need firefighters, we need communication experts, comm experts, doctors, dentists, everything. So this is really a shout out to the local community, and gosh, even further, if you're interested, we would love to talk to you. We have a recruiter, the door is always open. And that I'm also speaking to my active duty brethren that are getting off active duty. This is a wonderful way to stay engaged give back, wear the uniform, and the 507th is always looking for the best and brightest.
They left us with a great message there for the community and potential future airmen. We'll definitely let you know when the 507th releases their podcast so you can give it a listen as well. Thanks for listening to Tinker Talks.